No Directions 2017 Gen Con Seminar Coverage, Starfinder, The Digital Tools Horizon. Special thanks to Owen Casey Stevens for helping us record this seminar.
Hello, recording. No Direction rules.
We are, well, now we're recording.
Wasted all that spontaneity. It's now gone.
Is it going now?
It is going.
Okay, No Direction rules.
Yay.
I really do love you guys. You're fantastic.
We didn't make him say that, but it is like the fourth time.
I have Ryan in our sound sets, and he's
my
fantastic.
Okay.
Are you gentlemen all ready?
Yes.
All right. So I thought we would, first of all, we're going to be talking about electronic tools for Starfinder. I presume everyone here knows both what electronic tools and Starfinder is. Yes? Yes? Yeah. Good.
Woohoo!
I thought we'd start with introductions. My name is Owen Casey Stevens. I was very kindly asked to moderate this panel of fine gentlemen. I am the design lead for Starfinder, so I work for Paizo, and I am going to be using their tools like all the rest of you, so I am very excited about this. And then if we can go through and do introductions, who you are, what your tool and company is. And
I am Ben Looms.
Yes.
I'm from Australia, if you hadn't worked that out. I'm the creator of Sirenscape. 10 years ago I made Sirenscape to fix the problem of running audio at my table. It was very dodgy back then, and I shared it online as donationware, and 5 years ago we launched the current version of Sirenscape, and it's pew pew!
And it's awesome. Okay.
I'm Tobias Drury. I'm the lead developer on D20 Pro, virtual tabletop, and we're super excited about Starfinder and bringing excellent sci-fi to the virtual world.
Yeah.
And just for note, D20 Pro is how I occasionally still manage to play games with my friends in Oklahoma, even though I live in Washington, so thank you very much.
Yeah.
Continue on.
I'm Rob Bowes from Lone Wolf Development. We do Hero Lab and Drumworks, and we do all sorts of stuff with the great folks at Paizo. We're previewing Hero Lab online for Starfinder here, too. So got a lot of great stuff in the works for Starfinder.
Yeah.
And we at Paizo use Hero Lab to write things up, because otherwise the math is insane.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
You have only yourselves to blame. But we are so thankful.
That's not my fault. You'll notice that Starfinder's math is not as complicated, and that's what we wrote since I came on board.
Please keep it up high enough to keep us gainful.
Definitely.
Well, and the fact that you can click on things and have conditions immediately take, I think your guys are going to be fine. I've got some questions here that I was very helpfully handed, just as I walked in, so I thought we'd go over these, let each of these gentlemen answer it for the stuff that they are building, so that you can get excited and give them your money as soon as possible. And then once we've gone through all this, if we have any time, we'll answer questions from people. So,
one quick thing before we start.
Leave it.
I just want to do a accolade here for... last I checked was this morning. You guys were like number 70 something on Amazon.
Well, it was number 90 at 4 a.m.
At 5 a.m. it was 77 or something like that. That's the last I checked. So you guys could be hitting 50 in the getting top 50 at this point.
And that's
how well Starfinder is doing right now.
Yeah,
this
that's
is the league.
Games.
So
that's
his baby.
All products on Amazon.
Yeah, all products.
And I have played the adventure path all the way through with Dice Stormers, my YouTube channel guys.
Uh-huh.
And the first adventure path is wonderful. Really, really great stuff.
Rob McCreary wrote it, so I am not in the least bit surprised that it's awesome. He is our creative lead and did the first adventure as well as overseeing all the rest.
And it suffers from the typical problem of Paizo of incredibly rich world and great detailed environments and everything, It's really good.
You guys hit one out of the park.
Thank you all very much. We really appreciate it. Mm. All right, so let's go ahead and get to the first question. And I'll start with Ben and move down because I'm next to him. What new opportunities did Starfinder offer for your tools?
Yeah, cool. So me first?
Yeah, you first.
Now, I'm so excited about this stuff, so I'm going to rave on about how great it is. I don't kind of want to make the entire panel an ad for our stuff, so do also ask questions and things and talk about the general industry
just
in general.
Jumping off.
That's right. Starfinder is the first RPG to be released ever with a complete set of audio tools specifically designed for it. So no longer are RPGs just pencil and paper, and you kind of imagine things. Actually, they're embracing the digital tools of the future and the enhancement that those bring. No longer are movies being released without sound. There were some people, when they first started putting sound in movies, like, hey, they're spoiling the art form. And, you know, maybe 5 years ago, there was a bit of that in the RPG business, but not anymore, really. Everyone's using sound. Some people are just doing it in a really difficult free way, and some people are spending some money and spending a bit more. So can I give a demo of this Starship?
I would love you to, yes.
So we have built the sounds of every Starship in the core rulebook for Starfinder with close interaction with Paizo, who are amazing with their partners. Each of the cultures' starships sounds completely distinct. So the packed worlds, all their starships are full of kind of clicking objects. So we sampled like a torch clicker going past, and the disc drawer on an old PC and things like that. And you listen, it's kind of Firefly-ish. Whereas when we talked about the Cassifar ships, the Paizo guys came back and said, well, they're kind of like the Apple Store of starships. So if you listen to their helm, it's much quieter. And it's got sort of bing, bloop, 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 bloop. This is the Cassifar, yeah. But what you're really interested in, the crews, so, and the combat. So this is the way this sound set is built is completely wrapped around the Starfinder rules. So exactly what you're going to do in the game is in the sound set. So when you're going to go to cruise, the injectors in this packed vessel are going to fire up, you're going to accelerate up to cruise speed, and then you're there. So now the environment you're doing your role-playing in as you're cruising along is completely changed. Do tell me if it's too loud. When you return to idle, so you can jump to the drift in like an hour after you've been role-playing, down it slows. To jump to drift, you've got to sit static for like a minute. So actually our drift jump sound lasts for almost a whole minute. But if you do need to actually just quickly play it, we'll just play the tail of it with a short drift sound. You jump to another plane where you'll be able to travel more quickly. It's a kind of hold your breath moment when you're in between planes and you kind of stretch out to the infinite length of the entire universe kind of thing. Awesome. And then combat is what you really want to hear. So I'll just click on combat. Epic music. Now the best thing about the Starfinder core, the Starfinder Starship core rules, I can't speak, it's day three of Gen Con, is that everyone has a role. Just like on a Star Trek ship, everyone takes on a role. You've got engineer, science officer, helm, which is the pilot, is that right? Yeah, and gunner. So when the engineer comes around to his turn or her turn and she says, I'm going to hack one of my systems because it's glitching, you just touch this while she resolves her turn, you hear... Off comes a panel. And by the time that sound's played out, you've resolved her turn. When the science officer says she's going to scan the vessel, when the helm makes a fancy move, like a flip and burn, you just touch the helm button. Awesome. And most of all, of course, pew pew! There's even a damaged state for this vessel. So once you, if you come out of combat and you're barely working, you've got a missile lock sound. Damage to us. Damage to them. And then, of course, as typical of Sirenscape, you can then turn off, you know, individual tracks. So maybe you get your engineer to hack the system and turn off that damage. So you can see it's completely intimately wrapped around the RPG. Wow. Oh, thank you.
Still have to take my money.
This is the first time in my life where I helped create a series of actions that have now had custom sounds built for those actions.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a little choked up.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that you send the drafts to the Paizo creatives, and they come back and say, well, no, that doesn't sound like we imagined. And I send back the email, what does a maser sound like? And so they're like, oh, it's like a microwave laser. So when it goes, beep, 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 bong, enjoy your meal when you finish firing. And all that. So, yeah, it's fantastic. So, it's been amazing.
That's spectacular.
Yeah. And one more thing. So, they're the basic starships which are in the rule book. Uh-huh. When you build your own starship, which is the whole point of building your own starship, you take the basic model that matches your starship best, you go to the starship weapons in the Sunset Creator, and you pull in the actual weapons that correspond to your ship. You upload that to our server, and that becomes your sound set within the sci-fi player.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is
so cool. I'm genuinely excited. Okay, I'll shut up now.
I can't lie. I, I may end up.
Top that.
So Ben, what opportunities?
That's right. What opportunities? Yeah. But that's an opportunity. That's right. Yeah. That's
right. I think the question is answered.
That's right.
I'm being facetious.
That's right. Good.
Let us move on.
That's right. All right. Well.
Follow that.
We're not worthy.
Oh, no. I'm told you guys are amazing.
This cup is genuine plastic. So with D20 Pro, we've been working diligently for the last year building out a complete and utter rules engine that allows you to build out every possible kind of effect or thing you can imagine to manipulate and do what you want. With Starfinder, Starfinder is this fantastic blend between the Pathfinder space that we're all familiar with and a lot of the modern concepts of what we're seeing in newer RPGs with tracks with some abstractions to rules that. And what's nice about this is that with our rules engine and with Starfinder, we're able to really flex this hybridization between the different systems and bring combat tracks along with, you know, your starship battles, and then be able to switch into what's going on deck at the same time that you've got your overall view of things and keep that all within the same initiative and framework. Mm. I do not have a demo because all of our systems are actually being used to demo on the floor.
Mm-hmm. So if you want to see it, go to the floor.
Yeah. The third floor of the JW, we're running a couple of Starfinder games a day on our touch tables. So we've got people playing with future technology, playing future games.
That sounds amazing.
Yes. And so our Starfinder content currently is tail end of development. We're looking at trying to launch our full rule set by the end of August, beginning of September. And I believe I'll be talking more with this gentleman here about making sure that we have the same level of URI integration that we had.
Yeah, both these fantastic companies, integrate. You can control Sirenscape from within their app. So if you want to fire those laser, you don't have to exit RealmWorks or D20 Pro and go out and find the sound and click it. It actually can just appear on the map, which is just amazing, or within text or within a little window of shortcuts, which is super cool. Attention to the players, which is really, really important.
And as awesome as all this is, tell me about how you're going to make my life easier.
Yes.
Mine too, by the way. Yeah. Please.
Well, from an opportunity standpoint, the big thing for Hero Lab was Starfinder gave us a chance to do what we've been talking about doing for years, which is a complete start over from scratch. Mm. And so we're launching Hero Lab online. We're going to be doing an open beta for Starfinder starting next month. And then basically it's a top to bottom reset on everything. We went back. I mean, Hero Lab engine is very, very robust, but it is 10 years old.
Yeah.
So it got a lot of love, and the UI is a complete reset. So for you, those of you who are used to the very, let's just say dated, to be generous, interface of Hero Lab. It's all web-based. It'll fully adapt to any device you've got, whatever phone you've got, whatever tablet you've got, everything. And it's the other real opportunity with this centers on the ability through the network to bring the GM and the players all collaborating together, which we haven't been able to do from a desktop standpoint. And so that's a primary objective for us now.
Can you talk just a little bit about that player-GM integration?
The standard things that you'd get with just communicating back and forth, but also having a GM be able to do, let's say you've got some effect that he wants to apply to multiple party members. Uh-huh. He can go ahead and do that.
Wow, cool.
You can also have damage effects, things like that can all be done GM to the three PCs that it affects. The PCs can also then... the way we're going to do that is not just the GM can immediately do it. He can't change something. Your character is your character. Huh. But the way it will work, and same thing, this will work in reverse. So the players going back to the GM will be a matter of, I'd like to do this.
That's cool.
And then the GM just says, okay. So the GM would say, you take 13 points of damage, you take 13, you take 7. And then from there, the player would need to confirm, yes, yes,
that's cool.
Yes. if the player wants to do damage against the creature that the GM is running, then he said, I do 7 damage to that creature. And the GM then gets the opportunity to confirm.
That's awesome.
So it should make everything run a lot more smoothly. And another important part of this is that it's all a REST-based API, so it will make it possible for us to make HeroLab accessible to other tools like the virtual tabletops and such, so that we can all integrate much more cleanly than we have in the past.
Which we literally have been talking about in past panels in past years.
For years. Yeah. Exactly. Right. So this is like finally the opportunity to start over and do it right.
Given it, as awesome as all that is, I want to deviate from this piece of paper I was given for a moment and give you all a chance to ask questions from the wave of data you got, because I want this to be as interactive as possible. Do people have questions for anyone to start at the moment yet?
Is your Starfinder piece available right now?
Yeah, day one of Gen Con. And to release something at Gen Con, it just kills you, basically. Absolutely kills the whole everything just to get it done on top of doing the show. But we managed it. So, yeah, it's been great.
So you see him in a bar by the drink.
That's right, definitely.
Yes, sir.
Now, with the you said you're going to eventually have everything as a web-based, which, by the sound of it, is awesome. Now, for all of us that have bought all the licenses and everything for, like, the Pathfinder and everything, those are all going to be transferable?
Yes. Basically, for Starfinder is going to be our first launch where we don't have to worry about that. Then from there, once that's solid and stable, we're going to be doing Pathfinder and then other game systems as well. The way that's going to work is there's going to be a migration option that you can basically take all your desktop stuff and transfer it over. And that'll just, I don't know what it's going to be at this point. It's some small transfer thing. And at that point, everything you've got, so if you've got $300 worth of investment in HeroLab stuff, it'll all come over and then you're off and running on Pathfinder or HeroLab Online.
And how is the pricing going to work with the new system? Is it going to be more of a...
It's not going to be a subscription-based thing. It's going to work the exact same model that it currently is, where you buy the content once and you have it. The only thing that's going to be different is that since we need to keep the servers going all the time, is there will, when you buy in initially, or when if you are an existing customer and you actually you transfer stuff over, then at that point it'll come with, I think, don't quote me on this because I'm not the marketing person, and it's like, I want to make sure I don't give you wrong. So caveat, this may be slightly incorrect, but I think it's $20 or $25 a year would be the annual keep the servers on, and then regardless of how much content you've got. So if you bought $300 worth of stuff, could be more once you get Starfinder, Shadowrun, and all that sort of stuff in, it'll just be the one cost after that to keep everything going. That'd be on an annual basis. So about $2 a month.
That's really fair. It's good. Yeah.
Okay. We got more questions. Great. Let's start up here first.
When the player GM integration, which to me sounds fantastic because it sounds like you have even more player agency, like you're literally applying the damage to the monster, I think it's going to make them feel a lot more happy. Is that going to be, is that Bluetooth between the devices or is that through the server?
It'll be through the server.
Okay.
It'll be through the server. So the advantage of that is for people who run in a distributed environment, if they're running remotely, they'll all be connected.
It won't be any different.
Awesome. Yes, sir.
So I'm not familiar with Sirenscape, but we use Roll20, and we do our chat through Discord and or Skype. Is there a way to integrate Sirenscapes into those VoIP services?
I'm going to gush again, okay? Warning. So, yes, on our forums.sirenscape.com, there's instructions about how to route the sound of Sirenscape through Discord and TeamSpeak and Skype.
Okay.
And that works fantastically well, and lots of people are doing it. Depending on the bandwidth you have, it's either compressed a bit or horribly garbled. We just had the alpha the other day of our new exciting thing called the Master Minion Player. The master will just literally go to master.sirenscape.com and click on the same sort of all the same objects, and all the players, whether they're at the same table or whether it's a phone plugged into your Serra system over there or they're in Helsinki, have a little minion box. And when I click, Starship, pew, pew, it'll just sound in that machine locally. So they'll be able to control the volume and have full quality audio. And the thing it was like a surreal experience the other day when my dev team showed me the proof of concept, which we'd been hoping would work, and what were the delay times going to be like. It was like they didn't exist. It just went boom, boom, pew, pew. It was like just incredible. And what's amazing is we're not now having to preload sounds. So if you don't have the time to. If I navigate to a new sound set and just hit a sound, our servers distribute those samples, you know, instantly at about a ping speed. And of course, the samples are only kind of 400k or 300k, and then the minion plays it straight away. So that's the absolute solution for those softwares, for any software, obviously. And so you'll be able to send your calls just to the server instead of to a local server, right. And basically control Sirenscape remotely. So yes, and yes, and even better in the future.
Great. And so, yes, sir. Actually, if you don't mind, for just a second.
No,
we actually are halfway through our Discord integration. We have a web-based integration already in the app, so now you can actually use Discord directly inside of D20 Pro.
Cool.
In addition to Sirenscape, so with the not Minion Box version, you can still get a similar effect using our URI triggers.
Yeah.
While still having Discord live within the app.
Yeah. So what D20 Pro will do, we'll pass our command through D20 Pro out to the players, Sirenscapes that they have locally running. That's because they're awesome. But not all VTTs have done that, unfortunately, because some of them had other plans about some audio within their apps and all sorts of things like that, which still haven't happened anyway. Yes.
So I have a lot of community content wrapped up in Hero Lab as well, and I know that just looking at DriveThruRPG, Starfinder is already generating a lot of community and third-party content.
Mm-hmm.
How is third-party content going to relate to Hero Lab Online, or thereby, is it usable on Hero Online? How is it going to relate to D20 Pro?
It's
not standard or in the book.
For Hero Lab, it's going to work similarly to what it is today. And that you'll be able, right now, if you've got your own custom created content, you're able to drop that in. If there's community content, you'll be able to drop that in as well. So that's something that is not going to be part of the initial launch with the open beta, because there's a lot more complications associated with that. But that we are figuring should be online probably in like the November-ish time frame is our best guess right now. A guess. So could be December, but we want to have all that type of stuff in place before the holidays. That's our objective.
So on D20 Pro, what we're doing is, so we've built up this feature library that handles flow-based programming and various traits and whatnot, and we're rebuilding our Hero Lab importer to read the POR native format, and then we'll also be integrating with the web thing after we have it. And the end result is that anything that you're able to feed to us through Hero Lab, we're actually building the translation to bring it into the native feature system. So basically, in the old system, we had our abilities, and our special abilities would be read in from your Hero Lab files. In the new system, we're actually building out the full scripting model. If the system has a definition for the script, then you're going to be golden right off the bat. If it doesn't, and what I mean by this is, if you have some custom dice roll, or you have interesting behavior between the environment and a creature or something like that that is mapped to your character, then we'll either have that as part of our rule set, or you'll be able to add it. And then at the root of what we're doing, all we're taking is text data from the Hero Lab source, and we're mapping that to rules inside of our rules engine, which has logic behind it. That way, I don't have to know how he handles his logic. Mm-hmm. We've programmed the logic. All I need to know is that it's named the right thing.
Very cool.
Okay.
That's a good objection.
I can go back to the paper a couple of what do you most want to see added to Starfinder so you can have it in your tools? But I want to do reverse order this time.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Oh, boy. boy.
And in your case, I'm also willing to accept, what do you most not want to see us as? I think it's only fair to give you either option.
Having
seen what happens sometimes when we add random things to Pathfinder and you have to figure out how to program it.
Oh, yeah. Our biggest bane is the creative types and the assumptions they make. that would be so hard. No, that would take us 5 minutes. And then it's like, oh, this would be so easy. Let's do this. Oh, God, there's a month of our lives.
That's right. Gone.
You know, it's like, yeah, and that's for some, yeah, that's the lighter weight stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All bets are off on that. I've given up. It's like the creative types are, you know, you can't put shackles on them. Creative types need to be the creative types, and then we just grin and bear it, and we go lick our wounds when they do something that's completely outlandish.
Is there a kind of content that seems to be more popular with Hero Labs for people that use the system?
It covers the whole spectrum. It really does. I wish there was sort of like a stereotype we could use, because it would let us prioritize things better. But one of the amazing things about the gaming industry, I mean, I've seen this my entire life. I've been, oh God, that's scary. I've now been gaming for 42 years. for a long time now, I've only ever seen the full spectrum of stuff, and it bears out with everything with Hero Lab. That there's a taste of everything. Everybody wants something different. There's the core stuff, but it just covers the full spectrum.
Yeah, we had a huge burst of growth just earlier, late last year. And so we actually contacted the last sort of 200 people in that lump to find out what it was. And I wanted them to return with a silver bullet. Oh, it's because you did this ad on Facebook. And like literally everyone who responded had a completely different pathway to having found out about Sirenscape, to what they play,
they bought it.
Why they then triggered finally to actually jump on board. And I was like, damn you! So basically, it's such a diverse community, but such a lovely blended community, which is so friendly. It's really weird.
The thing I'd love to see the Starfinder ad, and this really skews more towards RumWorks, is I'd love to see a continuous, the more collaborative thing, like the starships and such. I love that aspect. It's that collaborative aspect within the party is something that there's been aspects of that with a few game systems over the years. A lot of the White Wolf stuff has typically had that with the werewolf stuff. There's the tribe and that type of stuff.
Right.
But other game systems outside of it hasn't, and I love that aspect of it. And that's something that I would love to then be able to more richly support with both in Hero Lab and also in RealmWorks.
Like Power Rangers combined.
Okay, that's going a little bit far than what you're envisioning.
Your straining goes too far. How did that happen?
I don't mean to like rain on the parade, but my 4-year-old loves the Power Rangers. he loves it. I can tell you everything you want to know about Dino Chargers, Power Rangers.
We'll happily take a 4-year-old's money.
That's just the collaborative aspect.
Yeah, that's cool.
I really
love
that, and I'd love to really build on that. And the online, the Hero Lab online would actually give us the ability to do it. Now that I think about it, so that would be wonderful.
Cool. Moving this way.
Yeah. So. In our space, D20 Pro, I feel, is getting a lot out of Starfinder already. The place where I'm really looking forward to the growth that Starfinder has to offer is with World Engine, which is our online mapping utility we're building. So this is currently in alpha. And this is a place where the wealth of science fiction content that is already being generated... I mean, we'd seen a lot of interest from other settings, and I'm going to avoid naming various things, just, out of politeness, but other systems that have existed for ages and maybe used hex, the decimal numbers for stats. So there are beautiful maps and things for this, but there was a sort of a peak to it. And since the announcement of Starfinder, there's been a boom of tile sets and content creation and all of this. This gives us the opportunity to start to finally get a massive library of science fiction content or sci-fi themed content that isn't star fighting. And
oops. Trek Wars, got it.
Yes. We have tons of fantasy content. We've got everything from the cracked tile to a rock plate to your pit trap. There's a billion versions of every one of these things, and I love them, but I'm excited that we're going to be able to get this stuff in and start to build this out. This bleeds back into D20 Pro because we can use that content to then build maps, build content for those applications, and it's any VTT, right? This is, just to be clear, we're not limiting access to this content in any way, but I'm very excited about where that's going to lead us and that opportunity.
It's cool.
Culture is what Paizo does so beautifully well, and that plays into sound in the most direct way, obviously. If every time that I read a passage and it really describes the way it looks, the way it smells, and even more and more frequently in Paizo stuff, I think I'm affecting you, there's writing about exactly what you're hearing, and that's fantastic for us. The fact that the cultures were delineated really specifically for all the starships meant that I could build 12 starships, small, medium, and large, of the four different cultures, and they all sound really, really different from one another. And that was super fun. So, yeah, and obviously space is an unlimited potential just to reach a little further into the void and meet another new, completely distinct culture.
One of the things that has really excited us is that there's a whole brand of game groups and game masters who are always afraid to put something in a campaign, something they're afraid will be invalidated. So, like, you don't want to say, hey, there's a little shop right here in this place, in the city of Absalom, in the Inner Sea region.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do that because they're afraid we'll then do a map and it won't be there.
Hmm.
Some people don't care, but there's some people that are really nervous about that. One of the things that we're really excited about on the design team for Starfinder is that there isn't going to be a map of the galaxy, per se, because the way hyperspace travel works, it's not how far or what direction something is, it's how many drift beacons are near it,
yeah.
is how far it takes to get there. And obviously we will never map every star in the galaxy, that's billions.
Mm.
So you can create your own system and say it's in the vast, it's this many days away.
Yeah, yeah.
We will never invalidate that, and you can put everything you want to there. Which is one of the reasons we're so excited by all this stuff, because this will empower GMs to more easily build their own things and have these tools and be able to maintain it.
Yeah,
so
that's
an area where we're really excited to see what you all are doing and how that is going to affect how the rules we create are used by the end user. Because I think the more we can all improve that end-using experience, obviously the more the people want to play the game, the more they're getting out of it.
And the creator can the creator can draw their map for their space station, that's whatever, and you know, create that. They can create the stats system or the special rule and upload it. They can then make the community sound set and upload that and share that with the community. And then, you know, everyone's enriched.
Weave it all together, exactly.
Yeah, that's right.
The goal is weaving it all together.
Yeah.
Well, so when we were going through and reviewing the rule sets and everything, I was taken by, there's this one sentence in the section that talks about drift beacons and how you travel and how it's a number of beacons that makes, it says, so far, no one has found a coordinate that is outside of the known galaxy.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice,
open.
Our creative director, James Sutter, really wants to empower game masters to build their own worlds, to explore new planets, to create new monsters. The Alien Archive monster creation system is so much simpler than the Pathfinder system. You can make a monster in 5 minutes. And I'm the creative, so I could be wrong, but I also hope it will be easier to program and easily use.
Oh, yes. I really, and the dev team has expressed this. They love the new monster creation stuff.
Awesome.
It's really, really... why spend, 10-15 minutes getting all the minutiae of a monster that's going to last for 4 rounds?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, this is the expendable. He's the mook. So get him in, get his purpose in, he serves his job, and then focus the time on the big bad boss.
Well, and even beyond that... have a Wilhelm scream. I applaud you, sir. And even beyond that, there are places where the old system would actually make it hard to do something that should be easy. And if I have in Pathfinder a group of frost giants, and I want one to be the shaman, if I start putting shaman levels on him, either his shaman abilities will be irrelevant to the fact that he's a giant guy with an axe, or I have to layer so many levels of shaman on him that he is totally off scale compared to the rest of the tribe that I want to be with him. And the way we handle that in Starfinder is we have a graph that says, hey, is your guy a shaman? What CR is he? Okay, for a shaman that level, then he will get this, this, and this. Just add those on, and don't worry about what that does to his hit points or his saving throws. Or just hear the shaman-like things he gets, which means it is super easy to say, here's a race of Elikoth, and one of the Elikoth is a soldier, and two of them are operatives, and you just drop that in. And it's super freeing for me as a GM.
What we did for this in D20 Pro is we have the base creature as just a selectable creature type and everything. So you can go to the bestiary and grab the creature, bring in your, stay with the Frost Giant reference, bring in your Frost Giant, and then you go to the variants for a class, and that is all of the trait variants. This isn't class levels. This isn't hit die addition. This is just pure and simple. What else can this thing do that the base creature can't normally do? And it adds those traits, abilities, and qualities. Yeah.
So since we've thrown some more information at you all, do we have more questions out here at this point? No? Great. No. Oh, we do.
One of the things I'd like to see, because I love kind of the ship as a template, I'd love to see kind of the world as a template, where it would be something across the systems where you're like, I've created this world, and I can send it's this gravity, this oxygen, this, so that like it then shows up in Hero Lab as, okay, I'm sending this to you, and everyone's affected this way.
Here are all the environments.
Yeah, that's cool.
We can pass it to the whole group. Everyone has got it. They don't have to tweak it on their sheets.
That's actually something that would integrate smoothly with Roamworks and Hero Lab together, because Roamworks would be a way to basically codify it all, have it as a reference. Players can access, know all that information, and then you can attach a Hero Lab data file to it as well, that at that point, once they drop that in, now they've got all those effects being applied. Mm. So you get the best of both worlds.
Okay, cool, yeah.
And that's exactly what we do with D20 Pro's new feature system now, right? So the if you've got difficult terrain or an environmental effect, you can apply those, and those end up showing up on the creature as active effects with whatever the duration, which could be infinite. And with the trigger system, it can be because they're on this map, they're under these effects. And when they leave the map, the effects go away. There's not any upkeep on the GM side. It's just, are you in the area or are you not in the area?
Yeah, it sounds like so much fun, because they're like, oh yeah, the gravity's off in this area.
Well, in the first adventure path, there's a section where the gravity's off, and there's certain conditions that are likely to come up, and it's fantastic. It's really cool.
The other advantage of doing
spoiler.
Sorry.
You're fine. Turns out we play with gravity in our first adventure in space. Yeah. The other fantastic thing about that is, I don't know how many times as a GM I'm like, oh, wait, you all are in fog.
That's right.
I forgot you're all in fog. For the past 2 hours, you haven't been able to see each other.
That's right, yeah.
So that's a great tool there. Okay. Yeah. We're actually getting towards the end, because we've got to wrap up before the hour, so people have time to get onto their other things. So if anyone have final...
It's an hour and a half slot.
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
It's an hour and a half slot.
The information I was going to give. We have plenty of time.
Yeah. On that note, can I throw something out?
Absolutely.
About the... So, regarding worlds, the reason why we call World Engine is that it lets you build entire worlds from the macro scale to the micro. So this means that you can use the generators to generate your world in your infinite cosmos, and then go in and plop in some cities, and then when you're ready to use the stuff, zoom in where you want to be, select the area you want, pop that out as a map, and put it onto your table or into your VTT, but you maintain the world as an entirety.
And there's a button on that map you just click, and that'll trigger Sirenscape to play the sound of that world.
Yeah. In D20 Pro, yes.
In D20 Pro.
We have not integrated that in World Engine.
But you will, because...
We will, yes, because... because you heard it here first.
That's right.
Because it's not a gun control.
Well, it is kind of spectacular. We at Paizo expect that someone comes to us to say, hey, we'd like to license your stuff for our tools. Obviously, they're going to work with us, right? They wouldn't come to us and be interested otherwise. Mm-hmm. But when they're working with each other, we really have nothing to do with that, except that we get to enjoy it and see. And I wonder, one of the things that happens when you have like this boom of extra growth, one of the things that happens is that just the fact that there is an integration and you've reached a certain point where just the network of users of different tools all start talking to each other.
Absolutely.
And that word of mouth and enjoyment of experience, simply, it's a different thing for every person, but what it is that they're all managing to use the same tools more and more.
Definitely. The community loves tweets that say, oh my god, I love the way this works with this, and they're both lovely companies or whatever. Just get retweeted way more than any sort of salesy type tweet that we can put out. Absolutely, people love companies playing nice with each other. Newsflash. Definitely. And obviously, we've got such incredibly synergistic audiences. People who like digital tools and like role playing who love Roamworks should know about the other two things. Yeah, definitely.
Can't wait for my first Starfinder Society game to integrate.
Absolutely.
Well,
still need to talk to Jeff about this, but we need to get internet into the Sagamore next year, so that that way, because we'll have Hero Lab online. Yeah. We'll have all of Kobe stuff, all of Ben's stuff. We do that. And
all I can say is I'm glad that's not my department.
You, however, can lobby for it. That's why I'm mentioning it here.
I totally can't. I mean, I certainly think that having online tools and access to the soundboard and stuff will, if we have an interactive for Starfinder next year, and while we may well, that seems a bit far out to be trying to project. Obviously, being able to use a lot of these tools for that would I think, be particularly helpful. So, since someone's shoving their hand up into the... someone's shoving their hand up. Great. A
couple questions about HeroLab. What about the license keys? How are they going to transfer?
What about the...
License keys.
The license keys. Basically, what would happen is that when you... like, if you do the migration. Now, you aren't going to be obligated to do the migration. If you want to stick with the desktop stuff, you can.
Probably will. Because that's what another question is. What are you going to do about down server time? What are you going to do about companies now putting limits on data? Like... Comcast is just putting limits on data.
I can answer the two of those things.
You've got people who don't have like their own device, who have to use somebody else's device. So your server goes down, so nobody's going to get playing.
Servers don't go down for more than 5 minutes.
Oh, I mean, sorry, I'm one of those creative people that you were talking about. And I assume you're one of either the Thai people, the Excel people, or the PHBs that don't. It's like, you know, because the point of the example, I took a white puzzle box into a project manager and go, tell me how long it's going to take you to put this puzzle together.
You asked some questions. Let's give them a bit of
Answer. Yeah.
So the first question of server downtime should be negligible.
They really are.
And we even have stuff set up where we actually have two parallel servers.
Yeah.
So one falls over, we switch over. We're rolling out a new release. We do it on the second server, and then we switch over. And so there's maybe a minute of downtime, which most customers wouldn't even notice because if they're in the middle of their game, unless they happen to hit right at that window, and then they hit again, it's like, oh, it's back up. Great. That's a concern that we have taken steps, and I'm assuming these guys are in the same boat. There's a lot of technology, a lot of stuff that's like standard practice on the tech side that is just good form, and I assume we're all taking those steps.
High availability servers. So we all have tech background, and I can tell you that I can't imagine that you're using anything less than redundant servers. With these scenarios with failover servers, you never put your fallback servers in the same machine room. It needs to be catastrophic, order for some of the stuff to
for
go.
For us, we've got one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, well, if the entire U.S. falls off the map...
Pacific Rim 1 or Pacific Rim 2?
It's kind of like, then
our disaster
the rest of the world is probably not gaming.
And then you also asked about data, the data. These data streams are tiny, 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 like really tiny. Even online multiplayer games are tiny, tiny data streams compared to... video, which is just 1,000 times bigger.
I think of us, I'm probably pushing the most data from our software packages because we're pushing graphics, right? We're pushing anywhere from a meg to 5 megs for a map at a given point, ideally in the 2 meg range. We're actually pushing that through a publish subscribe service, which is basically HTTP requests now. So it's about the same as when you say, hey Google, tell me about a thing. And you get back the first page of list. That's how we're actually passing our data. It's super lightweight, super low traffic. Eventually, you'll get the whole thing. But it doesn't take very long. An end user, you don't really notice any difference between a direct TCP/IP connection and PubSub. But what this does is it defrays and, in fact, hides to a certain extent the kinds of traffic you're pushing through that Comcast and other non-net neutrality companies are promoting.
And with HeroLab, it's just a tiny, tiny data store as text. So it's nothing.
It's basically
it's browser driven, correct?
It's going to be browser driven.
Okay, so what about the bugs between the different browsers? Because I have like a mapping software I work with now that I can't work with in Windows 10, but I can work with in Windows 7, and then we've got the main stuff for our PRD system that we have to use Chrome for. So it's...
Well, from our end, I know the dev team is getting everything working for Chrome, Firefox, Safari,
Edge, don't forget Edge.
And I think
even though you'd like to forget Edge,
I think
don't
they're even balking at but doing IE11.
Right.
Which should pretty much cover everybody. Now they are, because we're launching new, we are, and one of the biggest problems that has gone on in recent years is for folks that try to support legacy versions and the older versions of browsers. And we are basically saying that, you know, you need to run one of the, I don't know what it is, but a relatively new version of each of those browsers. If you're running an old Relic version, well, certain things may not work because we're optimizing for, this is our launch window, this is our starting point moving forward, and then we're going to be saddled with what's today as like what we need to be backwards compatible with for quite some time.
But that's just basically system requirements.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, system requirements.
Says you've got to have a modern launch.
It's exactly.
So you buy a brand new video game from Steam, and it has system requirements, and we try to meet them.
I'm not opposed to it, but this is all the questions I've got from my players already because of their concerns with things. Because to me, I like having it off on somebody else's server because if it crashes, okay, it crashes, but I assume, just like Dropbox or somebody else, all my stuff is going to be on somewhere else, and it's going to be still there.
Yes.
So
for our integration for these kind of services, like with World Engine and with the new Hero Lab Online, we've actually integrated Chromium into our application, so we can literally launch from within this a known browser that is going to be compatible from the get-go. You know, so this isn't, you need to go and install a new version. If you're running Windows 7 and you don't ever want to touch it, that's fine. D20 Pro has the modern Chromium engine built into it.
Yeah.
Okay. So we had another question back here?
Yeah, so you guys all work collaboratively, you know, incredibly well.
We try.
But, so I have to go to your place to get your stuff, I have to go to your spot to get your stuff, I have to go to your spot to get your stuff. So, you guys ever thought about a single marketplace so that with the single click of a button, I could get the whole world from you, the base Starfinder stuff from you, and all the sounds associated with it, whether that's a Humble Bundle or something else?
We have discussed that on a number of occasions.
Yes.
And there are some very interesting technical complications, and those stem from two primary sources. Toby may have more to add on this because he and I are the ones that have talked about this a lot. Basically, there's the technology that the app is built upon, and with HeroLab Desktop always having been a C++-based app and such, versus everything that they do on the Java side, it was kind of like, don't really work. And our licensing mechanisms are completely different. And so we've got things optimized within our sales mechanism to tie to our licensing model. They've got the same on their end, and trying to bridge those with the complications just become more and more problematic. Now that we're moving with the online model, they're going with the browser with the built baked in Chromium stuff. Now a lot of those hurdles are just dissipating. And so that becomes something we can start exploring more concretely because the technologies are now normalizing together.
Yeah.
Is that
accurate?
Yeah.
I'm going to throw the money anyway.
That's right.
We need the drive-through VTT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, seriously, right? One of the things, in addition to being an employee, Green Running, and I run Rogue Genius, and one of the things that really drove the explosion of the small independent RPG creator was that Drive-Thru and RPG Now created a common marketplace. It's again one of those network questions. I can't possibly myself put a Rogue Genius product in front of enough eyes to make a difference, but if I put it in front of a few and then it shows up on that marketplace and people can go through and it's well organized. So
One of our aims is to have, say, because I started two sentences. One of our aims is to allow our friends to sell Sirenscape content within their own app. So when you've got the embedded interface, which has just popped up in D20 Pro because you've clicked go to the Kobold layer and it pops up and you've signed in with your Sirenscape account and it says, you know, here's the Kobold sound set, I'll just click to buy.
and you can just click to buy that straight away. And we get to then pay a store fee, you know, because they've sold it from within their own app. And we've all talked about that. And I think, yeah, I think as we get more integration, it's better.
Yeah, with D20 Pro, our store definitely needs to be brought out of the app. So right now, D20 Pro, like Hero Lab, has been around a long time. Mm. And the marketplace is one of those pieces that is well aged. In other words, it's like we can't fire it.
Yeah, that's right.
It's been there too long. It's got tenure. We're working hard to move our marketplace out of the app so it's no longer an in-app purchase, at which point then integration, working as a team, you know, collectively becomes easier. And I actually want to call out to Paizo a little bit here, because this has been both a bane and a blessing. Working with Paizo has required working on the marketplace in general, because they have their unified sales for their PDFs, right? So when you buy your PDF, it's available to you in all the places where you could buy it from, so that you don't have to rebuy it when you buy additional content. And so that idea is sound and can certainly be more pervasive than just within the Paizo context.
We've had to build in some functionality on our end that we can adapt slightly and repurpose, and it will facilitate communication with our respective apps.
Likewise. Yeah. So we now have an external app registration system in the account management in D20 Pro. So you can give me a key and it'll register, and then it can do queries out, find out if the content's owned, and enable it in the app.
And what Rob said about technology is transforming, is allowing things to flow together. So when I talked about the master app, I said that you navigate to master.sirenscape.com. That's because the interface, which looks, you know, as complicated as that, is being delivered as HTML5, which is renderable by any browser, which means that he can, if he likes, rather than importing my Unity app, which is what this is, as an API, you know, only if he builds in Unity and we have to somehow lock it and secure it and give data access, he can literally just bring up a browser, you know, a window within his program and populate it from our server, and then it's all done. And you can click and it can just send a server call through. So it really is all being very, very, very much allowed by the way our technology has transformed. And one of those is the ability to go via online services. And one of the things that's allowed that is that you can now serve reliably with downtimes of, you know, 90 seconds or, you know, unless Linode goes down itself, you know, kind of thing, which is catastrophic kind of time. That was all very techie, wasn't it?
The people are sitting in this room, so I think they're good.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you came.
Back here.
I have a question about the Hero Lab, the way it's going to be. Just this is for clarification for myself. Now, the way that you guys have it set up is that you have one person, the DM, with one computer, and then everybody else has their own device with their character sheet and everything else. I'm able to manipulate. Is that all done through the Realmworks then?
No, that's all done through the Hero Lab server.
Okay, so
the Hero Lab stuff will be done through the Hero Lab server. You will not need Realmworks to do anything with that collaboration if you're doing stuff with Hero Lab.
And so as long as everybody has their license to, like, Starfinder...
Exactly.
Then they can all just bring up their device and I'm able to manipulate
them. Exactly. You can be on your phone. You know, person next to you can be on their tablet. Person next to that can be on their laptop. And the person next to, let's say, the GM, who's got his desktop system set up, plugged into his TV where he's broadcasting much stuff, he may also have Realmworks on there. He may also have D20 Pro on there. He may be running Sirenscape too. It's totally whatever he wants. But each one is independent of each other.
That's right.
And then can work with each other.
They basically make up an ecosystem. Yeah. Rob and I have talked about this digital ecosystem for gaming for years now, where it starts with mobile and browser space, where what's the first thing that you need to be able to deal with when you're playing a game? You have a character sheet. You have some representation of yourself. So if you're playing an analog game, you're using minis or, you know, quarters or Skittles or whatever. Just don't eat the pieces. until you defeat them.
Except that's right. Each time you kill one, yeah. Yes. Best way to play.
Anyway, the first level of technological integration is automation of the character sheet. And having that be immediately accessible on a mobile device or from a browser makes that very powerful. And then the second level is to integrate a desktop as in a tabletop, right? So now you have a digital space. Even if that's just the GM, seeing a digital representation of where everybody has gone to and is tracking it themselves, it's the same concept as when you're playing and your players have gotten lazy enough that they no longer move their own pieces. They're constantly telling you, can you move me over there? Mm-hmm. And so the GM's standing the whole time moving pieces. You do that on your digital platform, and so you have a record, so the next time you come back out, you've got your chess map of where the game was paused, right? Then after that, you go to the full digital space where now you have remote players or you have local players that are seeing the same screen, the same map, still having your character data now also fully integrated with your tabletop. So this is the cusp. You're sitting here hearing us talk about the leading edge of a revolution in the digital space.
And going online is really the linchpin of being able to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, that's when you talk about potentially sticking with the desktop, we don't have a problem with people sticking with the desktop. We're going to be totally fine with that because our goal is to make the online side of things so attractive and have so many advantages that your players are just going to want to do it. Because in doing it, they gain X, Y, and Z that they don't have on the desktop.
I don't want to do it because I gain X, Y, and Z.
Exactly. But your players may come kicking and screaming. And so it's like, because part of it is, you know, getting to the players, before the players see the value, and the players want it as well, so that they're very happily coming as opposed to, you know, digging their heels and, I don't know.
Yeah. And so, for instance, with the Soundset Creator, the Sirenscape Soundset Creator is a desktop app at the moment where you import samples from your disk into the app and then you edit them, set up all the parameters, so you create your own sound set and take out, download our content from the server onto the device and then mix and match it and then create a final authored thing. And then you hit upload, it uploads to the server and then you can download it onto your device. Now, the Master Minion version, you just edit the data on the server. And that's it. It's all auto-populated. It's all instantly changed. Mm-hmm. It doesn't need to migrate across to people's devices because the samples are being just already sent. Mm-hmm. So I changed the crows are crowing too frequently in my medieval town and getting, you know, annoying. So you just change the frequency of the crows. They're only allowed to crow every 2 to 7.5 minutes now. And that's it. That's the change because it's all flowing online instantly, which is super cool.
That's all great. Mm. We had a question way back here in the back of the wall, so I might have missed this. I apologize for the question. With HeroLab Online, I currently have the full license there. So the times I have 4 devices that are operating at the same time. You know, because they have an immediate family member, so I'm going to
people
were wondering if somebody else were off across the country. How is that licensure going to work when you move to HeroLab Online? Where we have multiple iterations trying to link to that on account, which is like a Roll D20, we've got one logon and a lot of you guys. So that's an individual and we own that. How where you already have a model that's 4 out there that can work moving from
that
line to
that we've actually got two different approaches that we are looking at adopting right now. It's been a subject of a lot of discussion and it's not something that or at a place where, since we're still debating between those two, I can't give you a concrete answer on that right now, but it's definitely something that we are very, very sensitive to. We have a lot. I would probably guess that at least 40 or 50% of our user base has at least 2, if not 3 or 4, the various devices that they're using the product on, and we need to support that. So it's something that we will absolutely... Since we're starting with Starfinder, we don't have to have this finalized right now. By the time we launch Pathfinder, we absolutely need to have that sorted out. And my guess is we should be announcing a final decision on that probably next month, by October for sure.
Because, you know, if I have the same family members...
Exactly, yes.
I own product and everything for Pathfinder.
Exactly.
I don't want to have to go back out versus you talked about earlier.
And we don't want you to. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there needs to be a migration path for that that fits that maps between the two models. There also needs to be a purchase model moving forward for people in the same sort of situation where it's, you know, husband, wife, and 2 kids or what have you sort of thing. They all need to be able to. They shouldn't all have to pay all over again each time for each of them, and we need to support that model. We also, on the flip side, one of the reasons that it's not like a cut and dry answer is that we also need to, there are gamers out there that are happy to abuse that sort of privilege.
Yeah.
It's been entertaining at times to even have, well, entertaining in a very frustrating way, to actually have three or four gamers in our booth openly talking about, well, let's pool our funds together and buy it. And it's clearly, it's like, you know, three college students and such that they're just here to abuse the system. And it's just like, so we've got to find some balance point there. Yes, some people will abuse it, but we want to keep that under control.
Yeah.
Go to another question?
One thing that Sirenscape does is, like, you're able to list, okay, you get three devices you can put it on. Mm-hmm. These are now registered, where, you know, no matter, as long as you're on one of those three, you don't have to enter a new license number or anything like that. It's just, they have, all right, it recognizes that device. Yeah, sure, go ahead and use it.
Yeah, so, yeah, on Sirenscape, you can be logged in on three devices simultaneously, and when you get the fourth device, it comes up, oh, here's a new device, you need to unbless something, so you follow that link. You can pick which of the other three, you know, which of the three that are currently logged on that you want to unbless, so you remove that. So if someone's logged in with your account somewhere over, you know, you'll see this weird device, you go, oh, whatever, okay, you unbless them, you know, bless your new device, and then change your password. So, yeah, we're happy for those three people to share, but of course each of those three people can only use one device then, you know.
Right. That also, that works great when you've got the separate app.
Yeah.
The moment you become purely web-based,
all
of a sudden it becomes a lot harder to get a machine identity that now you need. And then people who are able to log in from any device, now the concept of anchoring their subscription, or what subscriptions are wrong, but anchoring their account to a given device or two devices, three devices, in many people's eyes, that becomes objectionable. Because, well, it's just me. I can log in from anywhere. I should be able to log in from my work machine. I should be able to log in from my friend's machine. I should be able to log in the library. It doesn't matter.
The way Spotify...
Those arguments make sense.
Yeah,
so
that's right,
we've got to find... It's not as simple as it is with similar with the Sirenscape, because we can basically lock down to a specific device. And that changes once you have a purely web-based login identity type of thing.
And there's a balance to that. So my whole family has been using Spotify once, a single user account, and that's been great, you know. And then more and more we've clashed. So every time someone starts off their Spotify at home, suddenly I get booted off and it's playing like some dreadful music. And that clashing, you know, it was enough to then push me the other night onto family Spotify. So now I can have four people logged on simultaneously on that one account. But I had to swear black and blue that we all lived in the same house. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously some kind of, maybe there's just location tracking of some description. So already I'm using an American, they're using Sydney, so it's already pinging probably. But it's quite fascinating. We can look on our servers who's logging in when, for how many minutes, and all that sort of stuff. And it is always a balance. I love you saying that. It's so true. So you want to make things slightly annoying enough so that you
wanna
cheat.
You want to keep honest people honest.
Yeah, that's right.
The cheaters are going to cheat, and there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, that's right. And they're not going to pay anyway.
You want to keep the honest people honest, because if it's too easy... I mean, this goes back to the Wayback Machine, almost 20 years ago with Army Builder. Army Builder 2.0 was widely pirated. We didn't know to what extent.
Yeah, yeah.
So we actually instrumented in a way with the updates mechanism to basically record some information. We found that approximately 80% of the copies out there of Army Builder that were being used were pirated copies.
Wow.
When we came out with the new licensing technology, Army Builder 3.0, that's the same stuff we use in HeroLab today, there's been no piracy. And our sales tripled.
Yeah. Wow.
So what that told us was that means two out of every three people were honest people that were happy to buy it. If they needed to.
Yeah, that's right.
But if they don't have to, they'll happily use a pirated copy.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the only data point that we've got, but I assume that's kind of probably still going to be consistent today among the gamer population as a whole. And so based on that, we've got to institute some level of security, and it's a matter of not penalizing the honest people too much. But we need to keep the honest people honest so
that's
that
fascinating,
we can keep ourselves in business, we can keep creating these tools, et cetera.
Mm. Yeah, with D20 Pro, you know, we face similar issues, right? Where we have groups who will buy a GM license and player, you know, with guest seats to fill the whole thing, and they'll trade off who's GM. So they have an account that will move around amongst the group. And it's not ideal, and generally, you know, it's not a condoned behavior, but it's also not frowned upon. What we do prevent, though, is concurrency. So your GM license is on. That means you can't start up GM license over here, right? Yeah, yeah. And we also, with the new networking, we do anonymous machine identification. So we know that this machine is on with the license, and if 5 minutes later this other machine comes on with the license, then that's just data points for us to know that these things are happening.
That's what I'm talking about,
yeah.
But it'd be on top or a desktop.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're not using this to go through and hound
people. And so we count. So we count the number of devices, and I think once it goes past 10 in a month, and then that account gets pinged, and we'll just go and look at that account and maybe even email them and say, hey, this is weird, like, you know.
So with our new networking, with a new networking model, our fees are associated with individual machines. So the more people who log in with different machines, the more times that we, you know, are getting pinged for it.
Yeah.
And then there's some like 1.5 million messages per machine before there's any additional fees.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
something
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, this isn't an unsolved problem. You've got a credit card, right? And you're traveling because you're here.
Yeah.
And you've used it.
Yeah.
Did you get a notice saying fraud alert?
Yeah.
And
right.
what it is, they detected you used your card from some new site or new location, and then you end up registering the location. Mm-hmm. You know, you get this for logging into Gmail now, right? You log into your Gmail account. You know, can you authorize that Chrome was used on this machine at this location?
Yeah.
You know, so these are, because we're now talking about the web. And as vast and voluminous almost as much as the world
the
of Starfinder.
Of Starfinder. That's right. You make sure that there's are there final Starfinder questions that you have?
So the last thing we have here.
Did I cut you off? Sorry.
It's totally
fine. Love about ellipsis.
You guys know what I was saying.
Right, yeah.
Some fascinating business questions.
they're
sort of
cool.
Being an audience member for some of these. I love hearing how this all works. But the last question I've got here is, where do you see Starfinder going, and how will digital tools diverge from classic fantasy offerings?
How will digital tools...
Where do you see Starfinder going, and how do you see having to handle Starfinder differently than you would handle...
Oh, okay.
And it sounded like you actually already had an answer that you wanted to leap in on.
D20 Pro, this is an easy one. Currently, D20 Pro has no concept of what a hex is.
So. Oh my God! Really?
Yes, it's true. It's true. It doesn't know what the extra sides are for.
It can't count us four. That's right. That's cool. That's cool. Like most gamers, this friend.
So, thank you for that. Is going to be a challenge.
I see that.
Well, it's not actually.
I wondered about that.
It is and it isn't at the moment. This is actually why Starfinder did not release at Gen Con,
but it's
slated to release in the very, very near future.
Bloody creatives, I swear. That's right.
Well, I don't know. I want to go back to playing.
That's right.
War, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't use minis there.
Well,
the
for the last 10 years, the Chessex mats.
I know.
Chessex mats have all been the squares for the last decade. You know, they needed to go. Get back to the hex mats.
The advantage the squares have over hexes for something like Pathfinder is that we draw a bunch of dungeons.
Dungeons
have 90-degree angles.
That's true.
People prefer to do those on a square, but we are not planning to put a lot of dungeons floating in space for you to fly your starship through. I'm not saying none. I'm no way of saying
that's another first. You heard it here.
Have a dungeon back in space. But it's going to be less common.
Right.
And so hexes make more sense for that sort of freeform.
Starship stuck in a 100-foot by 100-foot gelatinous cube.
Half the video games I played in the 80s were a starship and dungeon, right? So I'm not saying we might not do it, but. But we had a long conversation about whether or not we were willing to have hexes be a thing in Starfinder. And one of the first questions was, hey, Jeff, can we sell a hex map? Will you authorize that? Because we don't want to release a game that we don't sell a solution for half the combat of. That was not a problem, but it was something we wanted to confirm before we went forward.
It's actually a security measure, wasn't it, the hex? It makes it harder to copy or something. That joke sounded better in my head.
If we were doing that, our dice would have symbols instead of numbers, and when you roll them, oh, all things would see that one.
People do that?
All right, so we've broken one of our panels.
In addition to the hexes.
Okay, good. Yeah, good.
This is basically Starfinder has given us the push that we needed to get a couple of final things nailed down that are in the app and just have to be completed. Mm. So free movement, which is the first step to getting a hex space for us. Mm. Arbitrary rotation, that's pretty much already there. Firing arcs. So cones, being able to do arcs, taking what is also the Wayback Machine square templates and throwing them out the door and putting polygons in place. So, you know, we currently have a polygon system for doing our shadow casting and our fog of war and handling all of our lighting. And so we have true radiuses for light sources. Well, those radiuses are made by saying how far.
They're
already arcs. They're just complete. So, you know, being able to take that and map our template logic onto it. So that's where I'm really excited about what Starfinder is putting us into. And then I'm extremely interested to see what people who are inspired by Starfinder do with this new feature system. So we've got this, you know, this toolkit now that you can make whatever, and you're going to create races and worlds and insane technologies and artifacts. And I just can't wait to see and hear about the things that people build. And and yeah, it's going to be very cool. I'm extremely excited.
That's awesome.
You want to go next?
I'll go last.
Okay. Anchorman. All right.
That's right.
All right. One of the things that I love the most about Starfinder is the open world we were talking about earlier, where it's basically you can drop your own creation in wherever. Because with Roamworks, I mean, what we're looking to do with the content market is have a lot of pieces that people can just drop in and use. And so one of the things that we're really angling for is lots of reusable modules, an inn, different like taverns, such places that everybody needs them to populate their world, but then they can drop in anywhere.
Yeah.
Well, they're much more, they're much smaller in the context of the fantasy setting. Whereas within Starfinder, they can be everything from something small to an entire planet, an entire star system. And so there's this huge opportunity there I see of people being able to create these things from the small to the vast and have them be drop-in components that anybody can reuse. And that is one of the things that, from me personally, I really want to be able to grab from a wealth of different options. There are times when I've got great ideas of my own and times where like, well, my ideas are here and here, but I don't have anything for this. So I don't have time to come up with that. So grab this. Great. Drop it in. And to have that flexibility is something that I am so looking forward to.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome.
Can my answer be just playing what a Mazer sounds like after three revisions?
Who wants to hear what a Mazer sounds like?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what a Mazer sounds. That's official Paizo content.
That is official Paizo Mazer. All right. We do, in fact, need to wrap up now. Do you guys have any last thoughts you want to...
Can I just say, I've always wanted to say, sometimes we get emails saying, oh, why can't Sirenscape be $1, or I want to buy all of the creator and permanent usage for it for like $100 and that's it, you know, and I never get to pay any more money. Mm-hmm. And hearing the development that these guys are doing, can I just say, be aware that it costs so much more than you can possibly imagine and takes always longer than you want to expect. And my brain is exploding thinking of what we'd have to do to be able to develop the tools that you guys have done, and am in awe, and I hope that you're always encouraging people to support these companies as much as you can.
If we don't pay for the cool stuff, people stop making cool stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I want this cool stuff, so you should all pay for it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So spread the word. And, you know, as I said, tweet, spread the word. Because, like, literally, the more people that use these companies, the more cool stuff we can make, and the quicker, literally, we can make it for you as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Any other last thoughts? Gentlemen, thank you so much.